plate a potential nugget.
And maybe just going back to the point you made about the self-assessment or self-awareness that you're entrepreneurial. And I can imagine coming out of Harvard, you know, the opportunity cost is quite high, right? In terms of the kind of placements and the companies that come on campus. So could you expand on that? Where did that hunch come from, that you're sort of entrepreneurial in orientation?
Yeah, I think, again, it's a lot of what maybe people said to me, and maybe partly the confidence I got when I was at Harvard Business School. So as I mentioned, my dad was a company man. And so looking at him, the natural thing to do would have been go join a big company and stick with it for a while, or at least stay in that universe for a long period of time. It would have been a good, it's actually low risk in a sense.
Right.
My grandfather, on the other hand, was a hell of a risk taker. And that generation, anyway, had to deal with losing everything in what is now Pakistan and moving to India. And so, you know, there was a whole different element of risk in that and dealing with adversity and stuff, which I heard about when I was younger. And then, you know, my second job after undergrad, but before business school, was at a private equity fund, actually, called MDC. And the founder, George McCowan, had been to Stanford undergrad and Harvard Business School, 35 years older than me. Mm-hmm. But he took a real liking to me. I mean, I was a young guy at the firm. And it turned out that he was an Indophile. And it's interesting, you know, we made a three-week trip to Asia. We were raising a new fund, and we said, let's try to get some Asian investors. This was very early days. You know, I joined them in late 93, and so this was in late 94 that we made this trip. And we spent a week in India and introduced him to a few people through my dad. And, you know, George ended up giving an interview to a couple of magazines, Business India and one of the newspapers. And in that, he sort of casually mentioned, he never told me about it, that, hey, you know, we have this young bright star, Ashish, who works with me. And by the way, he's thinking about going to business school, but I can assure you that he's going to come back here someday and do what I've done in the US, which is set up a private equity fund. And if he ever chooses to do it, I'm there to support him.
Fascinating.
And I, you know, I read the, I actually was not there in the room with him when he gave I read the interview afterwards when I had flown back to the US. And you know, it's one of those things where when your boss sort of has this confidence. So I went to him when I saw the other. I said, "Really, George?"
And he was like, "Why not?" You know, fascinating way of giving feedback.
Yeah, I know. So, I think having a mentor who just believed that I could do it. I mean, he himself had turned entrepreneurial much later in life, but you know, he was sort of putting his arm around me, saying, listen, I'm there for you. Just think about doing it much earlier. And having my grandfather's own example, who, you know, kept saying, listen, you have all the degrees, so what's the downside, you know? And so I think it's a lot of framing in your mind. I started to convince myself that, you know, frankly, people talk about downside, but what's the downside? You know, I was going to move back to India. I was going to stay in my parents' home. So I had like a zero cost base. So I didn't have to be earning a lot of money. I had the support system. I had degrees from good places, so, and a network of friends. So even if things failed, in 3 to 5 years, I could land somewhere. I was pretty confident of that. So, you know, what really was the downside in doing something entrepreneurial is the way I looked at it. And so doing it very early at age 30 made sense to me because, you know, when you're younger, you're more dynamic, you can work harder, you know, stuff like that. So it didn't seem odd to me to be doing it at age 30 versus getting a high-powered, you know, well-paying job. And in fact, I did work for 2 years and actually got paid very well because I worked for Goldman and I worked in their hedge fund group, which is a small group. And so, you know, the comp and bonus actually was very good. But But because I'd made up my mind, it was a 2-year thing. I was not getting hooked onto the corporate bandwagon. And my other belief is if your needs are small, I mean, I think a lot of people, as their comp goes up, their needs go up. They want a bigger apartment, they want a fancier car, they want their kids to go to the fanciest school, private school in the US or whatever. You know, you then have a cost base that keeps you on the treadmill. If your cost base is fairly low, you then have a lot of flexibility because you really don't need the comp in the early years.
And I'm also curious about what it takes to succeed, right? Let's say in a platform like a Goldman Sachs versus, you know, a 0-1 when you're starting something on your own. Could you talk a little bit about how you grew as a person in turning entrepreneur? If you reflect on taking the plunge in, let's say, the early years, in what ways were you stretched at that point in time?
Yeah, so look, I was really young. I mean, I started creating the plan when I was sort of 29 out of my small little 600 square foot apartment where I lived in Manhattan with my wife. I was married by then. I mean, actually, the other thing on downside, I somehow, ironically, I had this view that once you're married, you're sort of at least secure on the home front. So you don't have to, it's actually a better time to be entrepreneurial. So anyway, she was a good support because she always encouraged me to do what I wanted to do. And so I did a little bit of the prep work, got the PPTs in order. And then when I quit, I was fortunate that my former boss, George, gave me office space in New York. And I was in New York for about 6 months. I think the key to starting a private equity fund is fundraising. You know, if you can have the best ideas and all, but if you can't raise the money, you can't get going. It's interesting. I had zero work experience in India other than a couple of summer internships when I was a college kid. You know, working in a Citibank branch, helping the branch manager, and, you know, literally things like that. Those were my summer internships. That's my only work experience in India. I was raising an India-focused private equity fund. I was also doing this in the midst of, you know, a period when the Asian crisis had just happened. So people were, you know, the early guys who invested in Asia were just like, had given up. And then to top it all off, you had the 98 nuclear tests done by India and then the response by Pakistan and New York Times running these articles saying that, you know, this is the most dangerous place on earth. So it was a difficult time. I think what entrepreneurship taught me is first and foremost that sales is very important. I mean, you know, as an entrepreneur, you're always selling. You're trying to recruit somebody. I managed to recruit someone who I met through the Goldman Network, who was at Goldman at the time, who had been with my brother at Cornell, a guy called Kunal Shroff, who was a superstar. And partly because, you know, I was able to sell him on the idea that, listen, we're going back, but we're going to do something amazing, and, you know, et cetera. Similarly with investors, you know, as a salesman, you not only learn how to read people and how to make to customize a pitch in real time and to endear yourself to people, but you also sort of have to have real tenacity and perseverance. I mean, we had a 98% rejection rate. To wake up every morning and be back on the road to have database and do this research all by yourself to figure out who to work the network, to build that database, and really to be shameless in a sense.
And at that stage, Ashish, if I may ask, given you had limited experience in the Indian market, what were you selling, right, in terms of returns? Yeah. What was the basis on which people could build confidence with you?
Yeah, so one is I had, you know, some private equity experience, investing experience in the US. I'd done private equity pre-HPS, and I'd worked at Goldman in sort of the hedge fund business and covered Latin America and the US. So I had some investing, but limited number of years. I was basically selling the macro India story and the fact that there's a couple of, you know, smart guys who you can trust who will, you know, be entrepreneurial and sort of figure it out as you go along. So that in a nutshell was it, which is a hard sell, to be honest. But today it wouldn't work because the landscape has changed. There's so many PE players out there. But in that era when, you know, the industry was being formed, I think it was more about selling yourself, your capabilities, your ability to pull it off, and the overall macro story in a compelling way. And that's why the hit rate was so low, because most people were skeptical, you know. I mean, the macro seemed to be quite bad, actually, at that point in time. And what are these two young guys who never really worked in India? How are they going to figure it out? They're going to get eaten alive. You know? But I think being able to leverage, in a sense, you know, the people who were willing to bat for me. So when I left Goldman, the CEO of Goldman put in personal money, the guy who ran my group, who was a pretty high-powered guy, youngest partner ever at Goldman, put in money. I had 7 or 8 partners at Goldman, and a few other people who were quite well-known. Actually, at that time, Rajat Gupta, who was at McKinsey, you know, put money in. So people who were very credible and who were willing to bat for me, I think that's what eventually got us the money raise. So being able to target those people first and get them on board and get them to speak on our behalf was really the way we convinced people.
Thank you for listening. For more, please visit playtopotential.com.